Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel. This time, following the Alabama Crimson Tide's resounding, I thought that qualified as resounding tonight, right? 42-13, Alabama goes into Death Valley in what had been billed as an elimination game for the inaugural 12-team college football playoff field. Crimson Tide took the drama out of it. 21-6 halftime lead, and then a pivotal moment there in the third quarter, just when it looked like the LSU Tigers were about to cut that deficit to one score. Deontay Lawson with a goal line interception to turn away the Tigers. That seemed to be a pretty good body punch, maybe even a liver punch to the host Tigers. From that point forward, Alabama absolutely dominated the football game. Jalen Milroe with another performance for all time where his legs are concerned, lit up the Tigers once again on the ground. Four more rushing touchdowns and really heroes to choose from. You can go just about any direction you want with this Alabama football team in this latest performance and point to a coaching staff while you're at it now, because guys like Kane Womack, guys like Nick Sheridan, they had heard it pretty good after those two losses early in the season, but complete performance for this Alabama team in a must-win situation on the road. Kalen DeBoer's first SEC road win as Alabama head coach came at a pretty good spot, didn't it, at Tiger Stadium. So a lot to get into here on the program. We're kind of letting you file in here. We just took in Kalen DeBoer's post-game press conference there at Tiger Stadium. Nothing too newsworthy from an injury perspective. I know we'll talk about some of that on the show tonight. As much as anything, Q Robinson, that obviously did not look good for the veteran outside linebacker. Really hate it for Q because he is the consummate pro at this point in his career, because he has sat behind the likes of Dallas Turner and Will Anderson and Chris Braswell, and Quay Rousseau comes in now in the last couple of years and plays a prominent role at what is now the wolf position, was the jack for so many years under Nick Saban. Hate to see him go down. Did not look good. Did not sound good according to the ABC broadcast. Certainly hope it's something that he can get over. But again, next man up mindset. And I thought really across the board, you didn't have hero ball from anybody on this Alabama team. You had heroic performances. Deontay Lawson with that interception certainly qualifies as such. Jalen with what he was able to do with his legs. But there were guys that were in complimentary roles on some of the biggest plays of the game that you have to go back to kind of notice in those situations that simply did their job. And whether it was anxiety, whether it was newness, we hadn't really seen it from this Alabama team against this caliber of an opponent. Not for four quarters anyway. We saw it for a stretch, certainly against Georgia, back in Tuscaloosa in that memorable game with the Bulldogs. But for four quarters, really good stuff. It wasn't the best of starts for Alabama's kicking game and or the defense. Now, the offense did what it needed to do from the outset, going down, getting into the end zone, had a pre-snap penalty before even the first snap of the game. So I know Alabama fans at that point are thinking, here we go again, Tennessee, all over again. We're going to have pre-snap issues, communication issues. But Alabama really settled down after that, went down the field, got into the end zone. You kick it off, and then you get hit with a big kickoff return out the midfield. Durham for LSU then takes a carry 45 yards down inside the 10. But again, a lot of people probably aren't going to talk about Damani Jackson and the play he made on that run to stop it short of the end zone and force LSU to kick a field goal. So it's 7-3 there instead of 7-7. You still have maintained some of that momentum from that early touchdown lead, and give Damani Jackson a lot of credit. We're going to get into some of your comments too here in the show chat. So there's our guy Tex Titer with a howdy. We we can always count on Tex. We'd love to hear from you as well. Rhythmless One. That could be my handle, right? When it comes to Rhythmless. Chimes in, says Devontae Smith has been fighting the injury bug the whole year. Again tonight, Devontae, unfortunately, has been fighting that injury bug his whole career at Alabama. Just a year ago, it looked like he was going to be in position to play a pretty significant role for the Alabama defense. Injury curtailed that. And now we see him with his latest situation in the game against LSU. Looked like a lower extremity. And I thought it was interesting that Deshaun Jones, a corner, was actually the go-to guy there with Devontae Smith out. Deshaun Jones, not King Mack, not Red Morgan. Of course, Deshaun Jones has significant experience as a player on defense coming from Wake Forest. So, again, guys just picked up the slack throughout the night. And sometimes it didn't look particularly good at points in the game, but did what they needed to do. No hero ball. Just do your job and take care of your opportunities when they come your way. Jahad Campbell, inside linebacker play tonight was front seven play, really defensively, was, to me, that was as good as we've seen it from Alabama this season, especially given the competition, that LSU offensive line. You know, there's not a Kevin Falk in that backfield, but Durham and Williams are capable backs, but Alabama just was not having it. The tackling, the getting numbers to the ball, you know, for me, that points back to a comfort level that is being achieved by your defensive personnel. In other words, the light seems like it's going on across that unit. You know, we had seen some of it. You're a little hesitant with the Missouri game because, look, Drew Pine at quarterback, pretty much no Brady Cook for much of that game for Missouri. Yeah, it was a shutout. But that's also why you liked late in that game Alabama getting some starters back out there to preserve that shutout against the Tigers, because you got to start somewhere with that kind of stuff. That's a culture thing, man. That's a day-to-day mindset thing as much as anything else. So perhaps there was some benefit from that, even though you don't think about it much in real time when it's happening because it's a 34-0 game. But that edge, that doggedness that we saw some signs of coming out of Missouri, it was real. It was real this week. And Jahad Campbell played with a lot of it. It wasn't just athletic, talented, gifted Jahad Campbell, versatile Jahad Campbell we saw on Saturday night. It was a Jahad Campbell playing with a physicality and an edge that really spoke volumes as much as anything else. And I'll give the guys up front credit. You know, again, complimentary football, man. You go for it on a 4th-and-1, you get stuffed. 3rd-and-1, you try to go tempo, you get a bad shotgun snap. I've said it a couple times tonight already here on the channel and also on Spaces on X at halftime. Not a big fan of the tempo in those situations. I know I'm wrong. I'm supposed to like it, but I don't. But the defense picks you up. You know, you get stuffed. Very next play, you get a strip sack from Jahad Campbell on Garrick Nussmeier. Tim Smith with the recovery picked each other up. Paul Witt checking in here in the comments. We always enjoy hearing from Paul. Paul says, you tweeted it. The scheme looks better when it seems guys are trusting and following it. Yeah, funny how that works, isn't it, Paul? You know, and I think Bray Hubbard is a prime example of that. You know, no Keon Sab tonight at safety, but Bray Hubbard is playing at a level. Sully 462 chiming in here. Hubbard laying the wood out there. Another takeaway for Bray Hubbard. Three more takeaways for Alabama on the night. What is Alabama now? Alabama in SEC play is plus 10 in turnover margin. Yeah, so to have two losses, that's pretty rare to have two losses and be plus 10 in, what is it, 6 SEC games? Yeah, it's been pretty impressive. And Bray Hubbard, no doubt, seems like Bray Hubbard isn't just, again, a guy who's where he's supposed to be when he's supposed to be there. this dude's athletic enough, man. He can close on it. And then, as you pointed out, Sully, he can bring the wood. No doubt about that. Donald Andrews checking in here in the show chat says, most complete game since SEC championship game a year ago. I agree. Maybe even more so, because it didn't really feel like you had gaps on either side of the football in this game. Yeah, there was the mercy touchdown for LSU at the end of the game. How about Brian Kelly, boy? He punished those starters tonight. 42-6, and he makes those starters, makes Garrett Nussmeier stay out there and keep taking shots. Kane Womack dialing up the blitzes with the young guys out there. Oof. Kelly kind of let those guys have it. But, no, I agree. Certainly a complete performance. Chad Anderson chiming in here with the question here. He says, TR, what's your take? Still rotating OL this part of the season. Obviously clear ones. Not sold at right tackle, or just security and experience backups for the staff? Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, Jaden Roberts went out of the game. So you were playing Geno Vandermark. And then, of course, you have a couple of your interior offensive linemen throughout the course of the game lose their headgear. I know some people say, well, it's got to be maybe hands to the face or the face mask. I don't know. If it is, they're missing a lot of them, because it seems like at least once or twice a game, Tyler Booker, Parker Brailsford, the headgear comes unlodged, goes missing. But some ways it's been a little bit of a blessing, maybe. You've been able to get Geno Vandermark involved both at guard and center. I think he's done some nice things as this season has moved along. And on Jalen's big one to pretty much ice it there in the fourth quarter. The long touchdown run. What was that? That was Wilkin Formby at right tackle. So they are doing it. They are playing some guys. Paul Witt also in here in regards to that plus 10 in turnover margin. Paul noting 17 takeaways in 6 SEC games. That's almost 3 a game based on my limited public high school math capabilities there. So a lot of Bray Hubbard love here in the show chat. Let's see what else we've got here. Yeah, he did, Chad. Wilkin did play some meaningful snaps. No doubt about that. Sully points to, and look, Alabama benefited from some mistakes by LSU. There's no doubt about it. That face mask being a big one there. In the second half that was called on LSU on what looked to be a sack of Jalen. But you know what? When you play cleaner, the mistakes seemingly go the other way, and they end up being very, very big. And so when you clean things up from a penalty perspective and you're more efficient, amazing how that sort of shows up when the other team isn't. But it was a face mask. It was a face mask. Did I tweet that I felt like that officiating crew tonight probably consisted of entirely folks that were hall monitors back in elementary school? Yeah. Yeah, they probably were. Kevin's asking for the, where is the Fire DeBoer crowd tonight? Haven't seen them as much tonight, K. Special K. yeah, you think that Monday media availability is going to be a lot more fun for Kane Womack and Nick Sheridan. You know, both those guys are going to be in the, they're going to be in a good mood come Monday when they get to talk to the assembled media. Text Tider reminding folks, we appreciate that text. Yes. If you wouldn't mind, hit a thumbs up for us, hit a like. That helps us out tremendously here at Ryer on YouTube. And look, it wasn't a perfect game. Again, the start in terms of special teams and defense, pretty cringy. You know, you give up the long return out in the midfield, and then second offensive snap for LSU, you forget to set an edge. I don't know if Alabama was just misaligned there. Somebody didn't play the technique correctly. But you're thinking, you know, 45-yard run down to the 5. And again, give Damani Jackson a lot of credit. A hustling play, one of those heroic type of plays that isn't going to be highlighted probably as much as it should be. But you still end up forcing LSU to a field goal. That was big. And I thought, you know, I said on Talking Tide with Chase back on Thursday night, I was refusing to allow myself to be surprised by anything that happened in this game. Well, I was surprised. I was surprised it was 42-6 before the Mercy TD there late in the fourth for LSU. And I was also surprised that, you know, I don't know if it really showed up in the sacks, but I thought Alabama's pass rush was able to affect just two sacks, right? And two quarterback hurries based on the final stats here. But between the changing of looks, and you felt like Alabama really needed to mix it up for Garrett Nussmeier because he is kind of like a streaky shooter in basketball. You don't want to just give him clean looks because if you do, he's going to knock down a lot of shots. And so maybe you took something from what you saw. Mike Elko can switch it up with the best of them. And I thought Alabama at times brought more pressure. I mean, there was a pressure Alabama brought Bray Hubbard right up the A-gap from the safety position. It was like a straight-up seven-man pressure. But Womack did a nice job tonight mixing it up and just didn't allow Nussmeier to get really comfortable at all. I mean, when you look at the passing numbers for Nussmeier, 42 attempts, 239, the two interceptions. Yeah, you can live with that because – really, with Nussmeier, with that gunslinger's mentality, the thing I always look for with a guy like that is yards per attempt. You know, he threw for 239, but it took him 42 to get there. And you limit the LSU run game to 104 yards, and some of that really came when you wanted LSU running the ball as much as anything else. And if we went into this game and I told you, look, LSU running back Josh Williams is going to lead LSU in receptions, you probably would have felt pretty good about the defensive effort. And that's what happened. Kyron Lacy later in the game, after the game was decided, made some catches, including that Mercy touchdown catch there in the fourth quarter. He finishes 5 for 79. I was a little bit worried about the Aaron Anderson revenge game angle, perhaps. Aaron catches 3 balls for 27. You know, he's kind of a 17 yards per catch guy. So he averages 9. Kyron Lacy's a guy that can get combustible on you. And the longest reception you gave up tonight was 28 yards. You can live with that, especially when you're taking it away a couple of times via interceptions and you're also forcing a fumble and on a strip sack and getting on that fumble. So again, Jalen, very efficient throwing the football, nothing crazy in terms of yards, but boy, third downs really good to this Alabama offense, especially where Jalen's ability with his legs was concerned. 10 of 13 on thirds for Alabama. Alabama averaged 6.4 yards per play. And again, the plus three in turnover margin, man. Plus three in turnover margin turned all three of those takeaways into touchdowns, held on to the football for nearly 34 minutes. I thought it was really bigger in the first half when Alabama had it for about 20 of the 30 minutes and didn't just have it, scored 21 points while possessing it. So red zone, Alabama 4 for 4. That's, again, a lot of Jalen with those legs. And then it was good late. You know, you get guys, what about Richard Young in there running with some authority late with those fresh legs and, you know, that tired, weary LSU defense, you know, they don't want to see that late in the game. So good stuff all the way around. Bama checking in here in the comments says special teams wasn't the greatest tonight. It wasn't. I thought probably as much as anything, the kickoff coverage wasn't what you would like it to be. I'll say this for LSU. Xavier Thomas can go as a return guy. So if you can't kick that thing about 5 to 7 deep in the end zone, you're going to have to deal with him. And he had a couple of nice returns in the game. Thought Burnett was good enough. You know, that was an advantage Alabama had going into this game. was punting the football. And so when you look at Burnup tonight, yeah, he was about what he is. Just punted twice, 45.5 yard average, had the bomb there in the second half of 62 yards that wasn't returned. Didn't like the delay of game on the field goal attempt. I guess it kind of took care of itself because the kick didn't look like it was going to be close from Graham Nicholson from 52 yards out, but still. And you saw Kalen's response to it. He was not happy. He was not happy at all. I thought Kalen did some good stuff. I think Kalen, after the Tennessee game, he talked about this a little bit in the post game, some of the lessons learned from Tennessee. I know he doesn't like burning two or three timeouts in the first quarter and change, but sometimes that's what you got to do, especially if you're trying to preserve a scoring opportunity. I thought Alabama, at least once in Knoxville, was really wasteful in taking a delay when coaching staff could have helped out the offense, taken a timeout, sort of preserved an opportunity that ultimately went by the board. But it was really good stuff all the way around, I thought, in this game on Saturday night. So who else do we got? Donald Andrews checking in. Most impressive defensive performance this year. LSU can be explosive for sure. I agree. Paul Witt back in here. The pass rush was unpredictable tonight. And that was a good thing. Yeah, that goes back, Paul, to it looked like the bye week was good to Alabama in a couple of different ways. Offense, too, because we've seen variation of quarterback runs. That sort of quarterback lead, quarterback draw, from Jalen tonight with the back in front of him, and a couple of variations of it where they pulled and ran it, brought the back around. That was some good stuff from Nick Sheridan and the offensive staff. And yeah, I agree again with the different looks that Alabama gave Garrett Nussmeier. Bama going as far as to say Hubbard solidified himself as a starter. I don't know. I think he's going to be considered a starter. You know, we'll see when and if Keon's ready to go again, but you're not going to have any reservations about playing Bray Hubbard moving forward. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So Bray Hubbard, very impressive again. Jahad Campbell, very impressive in the game. Deontay Lawson with probably the biggest play of the game. Because, again, LSU goes in there. It's 21-13. Maybe they go for two, 21-14. It's a football game now. It's the full 30 minutes in that second half. But it wasn't just a big play in terms of managing a 15-point lead. It cut the Tigers deep, it felt like. Really, really did. Jahad had 12 tackles, 3 tackles for loss. Pass breakup, forced fumble, quarterback hurry, and 1.5 sacks. That'll get you drafted, Jahad. Take your time, though. You don't have to be in a hurry. Deontay with 7 tackles, 1 of those for loss. Malachi Moore. Back end was just really solid, right? Just didn't feel like there was much in the way of bus or anything like that. Took away the explosive plays for an LSU offense that really thrives on it. Tackling, getting numbers to the ball, just seemed really, really in lockstep. Good plan from Kane Womack. And as we talked about earlier, it's amazing how much better the plan looks when the execution meets up with it. Justin Jefferson, once again, we see a lot at the linebacker position because of the versatility of Jahad. And, you know, that may be even bigger moving forward if, and we're assuming, Q is out for an extended period of time. You can play with Quay Rousseau, but you're a little thin now, you know, when you think about that wolf position. Quay Rousseau saw a lot of Yanze Pierre tonight, but you can play Campbell up there some, and then you can also come with Justin Jefferson at inside linebacker to go along with Deontay Lawson. So it's a nice little luxury you've got right there. The Husky position, depending on Devontae Smith's availability here in the immediate future. Maybe it's Deshaun Jones. Red Morgan, we know, has worked in there. What you love about Mercer coming up, and we'll talk more about that this week, is that Mercer's no longer an academy-style offense. Remember the last time Alabama saw Mercer, I think it was a couple of years ago, and they were cut blocking and all of that stuff that you see from these academy offenses, because that's the game Will Anderson got kneecapped, I think. Remember that? Yeah. I think it was earlier in the season that year. David checking in. What's our defense doing differently the last few games? Seem to be way more effective. Well, David, it may be that the buy-in and the execution is becoming better. This is a different system. Make no doubt about it. This isn't the system that we saw for the last, 17 years under Nick Saban. So different in terms of coverages, different in terms of concepts. And it could just be, as we heard from Kalen DeBoer post-game tonight, he pointed to a growth process that needed to be undertaken. And it seems like they're moving forward quite nicely with that growth. Craig Wooden checking in. More Bray Hubbard love. Craig says, I hope Bray is the starter from now on. Sab is not a great tackler, and Bray is a solid tackler. Yeah, Bray can tackle. You know, the thing about Keon is I think he was playing with some stuff too. So I'm not ready to put him in the old blue recycle bin just yet. I say the more the merrier. If you get Keon Sab back to where he was to start the season, I feel better about that. That being said, I think what you've seen from Bray Hubbard allows you not to try to push Keon Sab more than you need to get back from his situation. You know, you start, and the thing that always happens too, right? You start whittling it down to this player or that player. Well, you play with two safeties. So you really need three or maybe four, because it's Keon Sab that's out now, and certainly you hope it doesn't happen, but it could be Malachi Moore that's out. So you're going to need them all, is kind of the way I look at it. Khalid checking in here in the show chat. The defense is gelling at the right time. Zero TDs and two games by the one defense. Yeah, that's what we were just talking about, Khalid. It just, the way that you can kind of tell that's the case is when you start seeing less explosive plays is a pretty good indicator, but also when you're getting more people to the ball, right? And it just seems like the green closes up a lot quicker when people are where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be there. And, you know, I don't think you have as many guys maybe trying to do too much, right? When you had some crossover maybe from the previous scheme to this scheme, and then, you know, guys are trying to win games on one snap. Just do your job. Do your job. And eventually the big play will come your way. But if you're not doing your job, you're not going to be there when it does. And I thought that's what we saw tonight. Guys just checking boxes, man. And then, you know, heroic play isn't the same as hero ball. It's anything but. Hero ball can be the great, great killer of a potentially great season. Mary Faith Peace checking in here. Can we please see the backup quarterbacks in the Mercer game? I mean, running plays, not just handing off. She's Mary Faith Peace talking about throwing it around a little bit. Wanted to see Ty Simpson tonight, maybe slaying that thing. Yeah, you know, I would think we would see those guys. You know, tonight was game was pretty much over, but I hear you too. You still like to get those guys some legitimate work within the offense, because you don't know, or not you, but any of us don't know when exactly you might need them. Now, you know, Ty has benefited from some legitimate work over these last couple of years, so I don't know if it's as important for him. I do think anytime you can give access to the playbook, maybe if not entirely, but a good bit, even to a sort of veteran at this point, like Ty Simpson, you need to do some of that. At the same time, you know, you're trying to be mindful of the opponent, I'm sure. You're trying to have some respect. And look, there's ways you can expose guys too to situations, maybe physically, that you'd rather not. Sully checking back in here. They weren't looking for that one shot on offense every play. Some good time-eating drives. Yeah, I mean, if you like sustained drives and running the football, you know, this was the game for you. This was that Alabama offense. And, you know, after all the talk about Jalen and his health and where's he at, where's the juice, the 39-yard touchdown run in the first quarter pretty much signaled that Jalen was in Baton Rouge coming off the bye week. You know, seemed to do him some good. And any time, I don't care what offense it is, any time your quarterback only needs to throw the football 18 times, and, you know, Jalen wasn't sacked in the game. Now, he had the sack that was wiped away by the face mask call on LSU. So, you know, in terms of quarterback hurries, pressure, sacks, he was hurried twice according to the sack. So if he dropped back 20, 22 times, you know, you're talking about no sacks and a couple of hurries. That's a good ratio, especially when he's running it for 185 yards on just 12 carries. And you look at the running backs. I talked about this in the first quarter live reaction show we did here on the channel to open the game. But you look at Jam, 13 carries, 38 yards. You look at Justice, 8 carries, 23 yards. But I thought throwing the ball to the backs, especially early in the game, kind of helped set up a lot of the other stuff. So, you know, Jam, 5 catches, 50 yards. Justice had a 9-yard grab. So between them, 6 catches for 69. So they averaged more than 10 yards per catch. It's pretty good for running backs. They were targeted a combined 6 times and they caught 6 balls. Just 2 catches for 29 yards for Ryan. He nearly had the deep ball there in the rain. Kind of an in-betweener layout, run through it. Hell of an attempt. He was open deep. They just couldn't connect. But again, you know, complimentary play off the ball. Guys did a nice job throughout the game, whether it was receivers blocking, whether it was tight ends blocking, backs blocking for Jalen on some of these runs. It was good stuff throughout the game. No doubt about that. Let's see if we got anything else in the show chat before we get out of here late night. On a Saturday. What a crazy Saturday, right? Miami goes down. Georgia goes down. Georgia now with 2 losses. And these rankings come out here in the next couple of days. Doesn't Alabama have to be ahead of Georgia? I mean, what was Alabama, 11, I guess, in the CFP poll going into this week? Does Georgia fall behind Alabama? And now you look at the probability numbers from ESPN and others. And Alabama now, the second best probability numbers to play in the SEC championship game. You're going to get in a situation here down the stretch, and I'm not trying to put the cart ahead of the horse, because Alabama still has to go to Norman, still have the Iron Bowl to play in Tuscaloosa. But with all of these 2 lost teams that could be in the college football playoff field before conference championship Saturday, you're going to have some teams that are like, nah, I think we're good with 2 losses and no conference championship game appearance. Now, I understand. Anytime you can win a championship, you want to play for it, especially an SEC championship. But at least in the back of your mind, you're thinking, if we go play in this conference championship game with 2 losses and we don't win it, now we're a 3 loss, how does that impact us potentially for the 12-team field? Are we screwed if we don't win the championship game when we could have been 10-2, sat at home as the 9 or 10 seed and just made the field otherwise? Ken makes a good observation here too. This was big. Talked about this during the week. Clean up the penalties and avoid the negative plays that put you behind schedule. And his point's pretty good here. It seemed like Alabama did a better job of that, staying on schedule. Just three tackles for loss for LSU in the game, no sacks. And again, penalties are kind of in that same thing. You know, clean up the penalties. Alabama did have 7 for 74, so it wasn't perfect, but half of what it had in Knoxville. So that's certainly some improvement for sure. So Alabama now, Mercer next week. Did you see the finish of Oklahoma, Missouri? Oof. That's rough. I mean, if you're OU, I don't know what you do about Brent Venables. Look, I understand LSU people are not happy tonight, but I can look directly at kind of the recruiting rankings for the 2025 cycle and even beyond and think, well, BK is still going to get players. You know, it's you can envision LSU getting or staying at a level where every year it's in this mix. I don't know about OU. I don't, just in terms of relevancy, forget about the college football playoff. Is OU even relevant in this Southeastern Conference now? Max says, the bright side for LSU is this meltdown will give y'all false hope. Mac must be an LSU fan. Justin Summerlin chiming in here in the show chat. Bama will be 8 or 9 in the playoff rankings Tuesday. I tend to think so too, Justin. I'm just interested to see what they do with Georgia, especially. What do you do with Miami? Now, who the hell has Miami played this season? And lose at Georgia Tech? You know, I always remind people that the ranking show is just that. It's a television show, especially in November. But it will be interesting from that perspective because you did have some seismic defeats like Georgia at Ole Miss. And that really, there was nothing fluky about that. Ole Miss, Georgia. And now that sets up next Saturday in Athens. You know, I mean, Georgia could go from a 3 seed to potentially out of the whole thing in less than 2 weeks' time. You know, Tennessee goes in there. And takes care of business next Saturday, which I'm still not entirely confident that'll be the case. You got a 3-loss Georgia team? Justin back in here says, Georgia can't be ahead of Alabama because both have 2 losses and Alabama beat Georgia. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Ole Miss is interesting, is all get out now with 2 losses. Because Ole Miss has what Alabama has. It has a win over Georgia on its home field. What Ole Miss doesn't have, though, is a win over LSU. And Ole Miss's other loss came to a Kentucky team that lost at home to a Vanderbilt team that beat Alabama. So if you follow me on quality wins to this point, and then you think about who those teams have also lost to, you know, how you sort all this out. No doubt about that. It'll be something to keep an eye on. Hey, as always, appreciate you folks. I need to mention this too. If you haven't already subscribed to Ryer on YouTube, hope you'll go ahead and do that right now. Hit that subscribe button. There's a notification bell there as well. If you'll hit that, you'll be alerted to all of our content as it drops here on Ryer on YouTube, and a thumbs up, a like would help us out tremendously as well. Of course, Chase Goodbread, a good pal from the Tuscaloosa News, going to join us here on the channel. I guess Sunday night we'll have a talking tide for you. And then throughout the week, we talk SEC football here on the channel, a little bit of NFL. Every once in a while, we even check in with Pops. Mike with a question here about the weather from Saturday night. Mike says, do you think the rain helped us? Sorry, just joining the chat. Seemed like Nuss never got clicking. You know, I thought that. I wondered that about Nuss a couple times during the game too, because, you know, we hear when it's combine time in the NFL draft process, right? We hear about hand measurements and things like that. And there were some throws from Nuss tonight where it didn't look very good coming out of his hand. I don't know. That's a long way to go around saying, I don't know if he struggled with it or not. You know, Kalen said post-game that it was something Alabama certainly anticipated. And what he liked about – one of the things he liked about the practice week was that Alabama's people, Alabama players, were asking for them to give them more of it, to make it more challenging in anticipation of what they expected to experience from a weather perspective in this game Saturday night. Justin says Nuss never got going because our defense kept showing different looks. Yeah, I tend to go more with that. Yeah, I think in some ways it was a continuation of what Nuss got from Texas A&M the last time out. And it did. It looked like at times Nuss was trying to read Greek or something. And I thought also Alabama got after it in the pass rush, man. I mean, it didn't feel like they were trying to rush the passer. It felt like they were rushing the passer. And it really started early. You know, kind of ran an early game with Q, a twist. Q was able to get some early pressure, and away they went. And again, give Kane Womack a lot of credit. And also give the players, because they got to carry it out, you know. And the busts were really minimalized. We didn't really see that. Didn't always finish on the quarterback. Got close, but got close enough, I think, to affect Nuss throughout the game. And I also thought, Mike also pointing out that we talked about this in the first quarter reaction show that LSU's offensive line and interior wasn't whole. So if you were going to exploit an area of that defense, I think it was pretty clear that Alabama anticipated it being from guard to guard. Bruce asking for some injury news. Talked about this a little bit earlier in the program. Didn't look good for Q. I didn't hear Kalen address any specifically. Devontae Smith left the game. Jaden Roberts left the game, but it looked like he stayed on the sideline. He didn't play, but Jaden's been dealing with some stuff throughout the season, as we know. I guess that was about the extent of it, if I can think of any more. But Q's looks to be really the biggest of the group. And it's big because he's an important piece there at that wolf position on defense, and really good special teams player, intangibly everything he brings to the mix. Great teammate by all accounts. So, and as much as anything, you hate it for Q, because it's been a wait your time sort of situation for him, and here he is. And you just hope it's nothing as severe as you're worried that it might be. Yeah, I agree, Mike. That's tough for Q. Anything else, guys, gals, before we get out of here? Late night on a Saturday, following the Alabama Crimson Tide's resounding 42-13 win over the LSU Tigers. Brian Kelly now 13-1 in night games. I was trying to think back about this. And you do have BYU Utah playing late night. That could be interesting as well, where the CFP is concerned. I guess, though, when you're talking conference champions and things like that, somebody's getting in. But I'm going to watch my Hawaii Rainbow Warriors are battling UNLV out on Oahu right now on CBS Sports. So I'll probably check that out. I have the TVs going. Hey, it's not too late, right? We got Sunday. I'm going to check out Mac Jones tomorrow. Sounds like Mac's going to get the start for the Jacksonville Jaguars, by the way, against the Minnesota Vikings of Will Reichert. Unfortunately, Will on IR, I guess. I guess Will's out. But you got Cam Robinson going from the Jags to the Vikings. Dallas Turner on that Vikings team. I think Dallas should take it easy on Mac DeMar, you know, his old pal, Mac Jones. I think that would be just the prudent and classy thing to do. I know that's absolutely not going to happen. But anyway, thanks for tuning in here right here on Ryer on YouTube. As always, appreciate everybody chiming in, all the viewers staying up late, hanging out with us as we recap and talk about and interact where the Alabama Crimson Tide's very, very impressive, complete performance against LSU was concerned. Travis Ryer, thanking you once again. Until next time, so long, everybody.